traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Welcome to our Kentucky Derby Prospect Profile. Today we're focusing on a rising star that's quickly capturing the attention of racing fans everywhere. Citizen Bull. This impressive colt, trained by the legendary Bob Baffert, has already taken the spotlight with a commanding victory at the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, scoring a remarkable 105 equibase speed figure and a career-high 96 buyer speed figure. Ranked at the top of the road to the Kentucky Derby leaderboard with 40 points, Citizen Bull is charging toward Churchill Downs with undeniable momentum. Bred for greatness, this Into Mischief colt boasts a stellar lineage that includes champions like Favorite Trick and Tis the Law. Citizen Bull is quickly rising in the horse racing scene with three impressive wins from four starts. Let's dive into his exciting racing career. Citizen Bull kicked off his career with a promising maiden special weight victory at Del Mar on August 17, 2024. Racing at 5.5 furlongs, he triumphed by 3/4 of a length.
Post-game, now only 5 off the leaders, starting to make some headway. Power Play is at the back. Past the half mile they go, and Smash It down at the rail very fast. Citizen Bull is right up alongside of that. Then we come back to Kalia Bay, Unique Power the Grey, only 3 off the leaders. Behind that comes Post Game, and Power Play is 9 off them. They come into the 3/8 pole, and now it's Citizen Bull going looking for the lead. Smash It still in with a shot down at the rail. Kalia Bay on the far side chasing Gamely too. Post Game starting to run on late. They're at the top of the lane now, and Citizen Bull goes up to get the lead, but not done with it on the inside as Smash It coming right back. Smash It, Citizen Bull. Citizen Bull has the advantage though. Citizen Bull and Martin Garcia to win it, going away in the end. Citizen Bull won it. Smash It finished up a very...
In his second outing, Citizen Bull faced a tougher challenge in the Grade 1 Del Mar Futurity on September 8th, 2024. Though he put up a valiant effort, he finished in third place, trailing by 5 3/4 lengths behind his stablemate Gaming, who secured the win.
Colors right behind the leaders. Down at the rail is Gaming, 6 lengths off the leaders, and Rank as last. They run to the half-mile pole, and Getaway Car at the rail, and Brother Tony very fast. They lead it by 2. Mackenzie Street right there in third. Gaming is kicking through at the rail. Gaming going up third now. R. Heisman in the pink still right there as well. Citizen Bull second last and 6 off the leader. At the back is Rank. 3/8 of a mile to go in the Del Mar Futurity, and Getaway Car now opens up, leads 1.5 lengths, but Gaming comes right after him, and Gaming runs up alongside a Getaway Car. In behind that, Mackenzie Street and Citizen Bull on the outside, 4 of them in a straight line. They head for home. Getaway Car in deep water down at the rail. Gaming has taken the lead. On the outside, Citizen Bull is in with a shot as well, and Mackenzie Street running a huge one. They are coming for home, and Gaming is the one to catch. He's finding more on the lead. Gaming and Flavian Pratt in front. Mackenzie Street chasing Gamely, but Gaming has won the Del Mar Futurity.
Citizen Bull showed his growth and strength in the American Faro Stakes at Santa Anita on October 5th, 2024. Covering 1 1/16 miles, he crossed the finish line with a commanding 2-length lead over Getaway Car in a time of 1:44.30.
Emerald Bay and Mackenzie Street, top of the stretch. Martin Garcia still hand-riding Citizen Bull. They've spurted 3 clear of Getaway Car, followed by Mackenzie Street, who picks it up a bit late, coming to the 16th pole, and it's Citizen Bull with a 3-length lead. Getaway Car did his best, but was second best. Citizen Bull punches his ticket in Gate to Wire.
Citizen Bull's crowning achievement came in the $2 million Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where he outperformed Gaming to win by 1.5 lengths at Del Mar. This victory awarded him 30 Kentucky Derby points and marked Baffert's record-breaking 6th juvenile win.
Then Akora Wazell, a break of another 2.5 lengths more to Chancer McPatrick, who's ahead of East Avenue early on. East Avenue looks a little uncomfortable in the early stages here, now being passed by Shin Believe, and Hill Road is the trailer. So on to the backstretch, Citizen Bull makes the pace. Gaming 3/4 of a length behind. Then to the outside, it is a Corozel in third. First quarter mile, 23.44. It was realistic. They're not rolling right along up front. Getaway Car is fourth and down on the inside. Jonathan's Way, fifth in between horses with four lengths to make up at this stage. Then Shouldn't Believe and Ferocious. East Avenue and Chancer McPatrick are side by side, and they're seven lengths behind Citizen Bull. Hill Road is the trailer. 47.89 was an easy half mile. And now the field races for the far turn, where it is still Citizen Bull and Gaming. The Bob Baffert horses 1-2. Okoro Azel, Shouldn't Believe, has moved up on the outside. Getaway Car is at the rail, and the others have plenty of work to do as they come toward the top of the stretch. Citizen Bull and Gaming, and they turn for home together. The stablemates 1-2, they're into the stretch. Citizen Bull in front, trying to take them all the way, and he kicks away. Citizen Bull by two. Gaming is all out second. Getaway Car third. Baffert 1-2-3 as they come to the finish. It is going to be Citizen Bull and Martinez.
Citizen Bull's journey to the 2025 Kentucky Derby is just getting started, but his talent, speed, and strong team make him a serious contender. With a Breeders' Cup Juvenile victory and 40 qualifying points already in the bank, this colt is poised to make waves on the Triple Crown Trail. Will he be the one to take home the roses in May? Only time will tell, but we'll be here to bring you every update. Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned as we follow Citizen Bull's thrilling path to the Derby.
Really excited to get in here tonight. Looking forward to see a foal be born. It'll be pretty amazing to see that firsthand and really see the start of, you know, a horse's journey.
Oh, there we go.
Good girl.
Here's a hoof.
Good girl. Good girl.
Wow. Well done, Mum. Little girl. Feeling's just unbelievable. Feel that little heartbeat. Well done. Oh, look at you.
It's such a privilege to meet you. It all begins here, hey? You're at the start of your journey just like me.
Gibson is on the angle, taking no prisoners.
No wonder he's considered the best defender of his generation.
I'm Josh Gibson, former AFL athlete. Across my AFL career, there were plenty of highs and lows, from premierships to injury.
Oh, he's landed badly there.
But there was always one constant, and that was my love for horses. I think I got that love from my parents, my mum growing up on a farm and riding, my father being from Barbados and having a real love for racehorses.
Although it was my dad who sparked my interest in racing, it was through my mum that I developed my love for the sport. Because of her, I always look forward to one special season on the Victorian calendar, the Spring Carnival.
Magnificence of athletes, human and equine. From the back box to the executive suites, we are drawn to the spectacle, the drama, heartbreak, and exhilaration. A community comes together,
racing in the Geelong Cup.
Emotions running as high as they might at a metropolitan feature. But that glow on the horizon, spring is coming. 12 months ago, Incentivised adds another chapter to the Caulfield Cup.
4 lengths in front.
The girl in from the north, a shooting star, now aligned with the likes of Might and Power in 1997. Very Elegant stops the nation. And we compare her Melbourne Cup victory to the benchmark, to Maccabi Diva. Still, the immortal run. Will anybody match Wings? You'd think it impossible. Four Cox plates, and she knew herself to be something special.
come up the legend! Greatness! Winks has done it!
Everybody loves the Cinderella story. Michelle Payne inspired Hollywood, taking Prince of Penzance at 101, stride by stride, up the Flemington Straight to prove girls can do anything. When he visited Melbourne in 1895, Mark Twain had never seen anything like our racing grand final. Everybody is vivacious, excited, happy. Anticipation, expectation. There's nothing quite like racing in the sport.
I want to ensure that racing's around for the next generations. I want my son to be able to love horse racing just like I was able to growing up. But in order for that to happen, I need to dive a little bit deeper. I need to embark on a journey which is going to involve me looking inside this industry and really making sure that horse welfare is at the front of their minds.
To do this, I'm going to follow the horse's journey from foal to track and well into their post-racing careers, witnessing every pivotal moment in between.
And now, being a retired athlete and working in the horse health industry, I'm going to be speaking to some people to get their inside information on what they are doing to make sure that horses' health is number one and it's not just the prize money and the accolades that we see on TV. This is an industry that has given my family and I so much joy over the years. But I can't begin this journey without acknowledging a few incidents that have cast a shadow over the sport in recent years. Starting with the very public breakdown and euthanasia of Anthony Van Dyke in the 2020 Melbourne Cup, the second in 3 years.
I don't take a challenge like this one lightly. There really is no other place to start than at the top of the tree with the then and current chairman of Racing Victoria, Brian Kruger.
Thanks very much for stopping in for this meeting.
No problems at all.
Grab a seat.
I really wanted to do some research into Racing Victoria because, you know, a lot of people just see the racing side, and I was actually astounded at how multifaceted Racing Victoria is.
Yeah, Josh, it is. It's an amazing industry. It's not just about going and enjoying the races on race day. The industry is a very big employer here in Victoria. We have something like 25,000 people that rely on the industry for their livelihood. We contribute something like $3 billion to the Victorian economy. And obviously the topic we're here to talk about today, equine welfare, are also critical parts that we need to look after.
The treatment of thoroughbreds have recently come into question with a number of public injuries across the last 9 years of Victoria's Spring Carnival. The most recent, Anthony Van Dyke, who had to be euthanized after sustaining a fracture during the 2020 race. How do you win back some of the public? What do you tell them and what do you show them to say that you're trying to change?
The Anthony Van Dyke fatality actually hit me really hard. I remember seeing that horse being pulled up and just thinking, oh my God, this is terrible. And, pretty soon in the day or two after that, Racing Victoria started working with the Victorian Racing Club about changes that need to happen. Clearly, there's a pattern with the Melbourne Cup in particular with international horses, so that was a key focus for us. Difficult to pinpoint one particular cause, and that's why we ended up with 42, I think it was, protocols that were introduced to try to mitigate all of the various risk factors that we saw for international horses that were participating during our spring and again in particular in the Melbourne Cup. They are world-leading safety protocols. No one else in the world is as stringent as what we are about making sure that the horses that are running during our spring racing carnival had the best opportunity to race safely. But that's a journey. It's the start of a journey, and it will take us, we recognise it's going to take us some time. We do take equine welfare as seriously as any other issue. It's, you know, it's if not the most important issue, it's with integrity, it's right up there.
2021 was successful. You know, I don't think I ever played in a grand final with Hawthorne where we didn't have an injury. So that's an awesome result. Do you think that that's vindication or validation? And what do you do from there to make sure that 2022 follows in same suit?
So I think we all know that 1 year is not really vindication. We'll need a lot more safe races before we sort of rest on our laurels and think we've got all the answers. But I want to not only make the improvements, but make sure we're communicating them to young people. I want them to have the opportunity that I've had to enjoy and love the sport, whether that's as an owner, you know, a participant, a punter, you know, a race goer, because I've got so much enjoyment out of it. I want young people that are coming through now to look at the sport and go, you know what, that's a sport I really want to be involved with. For me, there's all sorts of different reasons why we need to be good at equine welfare. It's the right thing to do, but encouraging that next generation to be involved in some way or another is something I'd really like to look back on and think we've made a difference in.
It was great to see that under Brian, Racing Victoria saw equine welfare as a top priority. But I'll need to find out for myself if this attitude is being reflected in all aspects of the horse racing industry.
Next stop on my journey looking into the treatment of horses in the racing industry, I'm catching up with an old footy mate, Anthony Mithen. Anthony is now the stud principal at Rosemont Stud, considered to be one of Victoria's most progressive and respected facilities.
G'day, Josh.
Anthony, how are you?
How
are
you going? Welcome to Rosemont.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, fantastic property.
Yeah, no, it's a ripper.
Unbelievable. Yeah. How many acres are you on here?
There's 700 at this farm, there's 300 up on top of the hill, and there's another 2,500 at the stud farm. So takes a bit of management, as you would appreciate.
No doubt. I'm sure you've got a lot of stable hands here, mate.
Yeah, there's a few around. There's a few around, a few horses around, but we're looking forward to showing you around and showing you how we do things here and how so many other farms make sure that these beautiful animals are looked after from birth.
Is it all mares here? What's on this 700 acres?
So this is our original farm. It's now just become the spelling farm. You know, old footballers go on their footy trips. Well, the horses, there's no trips to Bali, but there's nice paddocks for them to just rest and recuperate after a racing campaign.
Yeah.
Most of all, we've got a great team who are really passionate about what they do.
Every horse is checked twice a day, individually fed. They're on their own diet program, depending on what the trainer or the managing owner would like to do with that horse, because you want the horse to have the best break possible. We all know, you know better than most, if you have a good break from your athletic pursuit, you're most likely to get your best out of yourself the 100%. Next time you go.
So you've got a few smaller spelling paddocks here?
Actually, I tell you, we've got a bit of a star of the show in one of these paddocks at the moment. Good old Runaway, who's one of our most favourite horses. He was a slow horse, and we had a long chat about his pedigree, and we said, look, maybe he needs a bit of distance, this horse. And from the moment he stepped out further than a mile, well, he couldn't stop winning. He took us to Geelong Cup Day. He was 15-1, and we went there excited to have a runner. Well, lo and behold, led all the way, got the prize, and we nearly collapsed in the mounting yard, winning our own local cup. And then some 12 days later, we were running in a Melbourne Cup.
And they're racing in the Melbourne Cup.
It didn't matter where we ran, what happened from there. I've never run 17th and felt so good.
Good. So what's the plan for him now?
Certainly got a home for life here at Rosemont.
I was going to say,
we've named the paddock after Runaway, right down on the river, plenty of gum trees in it, and it's the Runaway paddock, and will forever be the Runaway paddock, and that's where he'll end up.
Such a good story.
Yeah.
It's awesome hearing stories like this one, a thoroughbred being celebrated, not just for winning, and especially one that will have a good home after his career ends. And that's something I plan to investigate later. But right now, I'm heading back to where it all starts to find out how young horses are treated early in their lives and catch up with a newborn filly.
Freya.
Hello,
how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Head vet at Rosemont, I'm sure you are a busy lady.
I'm pretty busy at the moment, yes.
So I was lucky enough to be in the tower to deliver this one. Where were you?
You were doing the work. I was asleep.
Are you happy with the way that this little filly's come out?
Looks brilliant. Really, really strong. Nice little filly. I'll actually do a check now. Do its heart and lungs, take its temperature, and I think you might be able to give me a hand with that.
Okay, all right. Okay. I can be your 2IC, yep. All right.
So we do all these checks on every single foal that comes through. Doesn't really make a difference whether or not it's a Group 1 winner or not at this point. We're just wanting healthy foals on the ground, and we're just doing checks and making sure that they're all healthy.
And do you do any scanning, or are you assessing joints?
So we assess joints every day, really.
Every day,
that's something that we check.
Have you had any other foals arrive?
Yes, we've had about 14 so far.
14. Now, do you go out and do any checks on them today, or have I caught you at the end of your rounds? What have you got planned?
No, we can go and have a check of them all, just see whether they're all looking healthy and doing what they should be doing, really.
So how many foals did you say have already hit the ground?
We've got 14 on the ground at the 14. Moment. Yeah. And you can see each foal is with its mother. Even though it's a group situation, they still follow their mothers.
Identification and being able to track horses is so big these days.
Yes,
And what's your process here?
So we generally brand around about weaning time, so about 6 months old. So you can't register any thoroughbreds in Australia without them being branded, microchipped, and a hair sample taken for DNA.
Yeah.
And we send them into the Australian stud book.
Right.
So everything's recorded. So really, nowadays, I don't think any horse can be misidentified.
For most of these young horses, the next step in their journey comes when they are 12 months old.
I'm off to witness the yearling sales at the William Inglis & Sons world-class auction facility.
Good to see you.
How are you?
Fancy seeing you here at the sales.
And once again, I've got my old mate Anthony to show me around.
This is the back parade ring, so they're moments away from getting sold to the highest bidder. At this point in time, you're probably a bit emotional because you do get attached to these horses, and there's times you think, oh, am I doing the right thing selling this horse? It's a beautiful horse. We've had it in our life for 18 months. You hope that they go to a good home. I've sold horses for less money knowing they're going to a better home. Yeah. It's not always about the almighty dollar and how much you can get out of each commodity. They're not commodities. They're animals and they're beautiful.
As a purchaser, apart from knowing the breeding, what other insights can I get into making sure that this horse is okay?
There's a whole raft of transparency that us as vendors provide, and it's got so much better. There's x-rays, there's scope to check on what the throat looks like, because their throats are not always made for high-end activity, so you get a look at what the internal of the throat looks like. You get to look at the internal of the bone. After sale, you get the opportunity to get it blood tested to make sure that there's been no drugs used. It was a thing long gone in the past that steroids were used in the preparation of these horses. That's long gone. There's heart tests. There's even DNA that you can get done. You can take hair and send that hair off and check the DNA structure of the horse. We all wanted to be an AFL star, Gibbo. We all did, but some of us just weren't made to do it. And it's the same here, and we give the buyer every opportunity to assess all that information.
This information is not just for the buyers. It's also crucial for the welfare of the horse. It helps ensure that any horses capable of racing enter the industry. Australia has always had a healthy love of horse racing, but there's always been the question of what happens to these thoroughbreds after their racing days are over. The topic was the focus of a 2019 report on the ABC. Although the report did not focus on events that occurred in Victoria, it's still something that I want to discuss with the chairman of Racing Victoria, Brian Kruger.
The result of that is really about accelerating what we've been doing in the equine welfare space and obviously talking more publicly about what we're doing.
So what have you got in place to look after them?
The big challenge has always been what happens with the horses once they leave the industry. You've got to start working on those things from the day they're bred, and then it's about developing those opportunities for them. So we do a lot of things like our off-the-track program, which is about retraining horses for their second careers. Traceability's also been a big challenge for us to make sure we know where the horses are and what's happening with them so we can take corrective actions if we need to, if they're not heading down the right path. I raced a horse, in fact, it was my wife's horse, called Lagerfeld, a very good horse. I think he won 6 or 7 races. He's now moved on to his post-racing career. He's with Racing Hearts, which is an equine welfare therapy organisation. And we get to see photos of him helping people get over their various issues. And I think I get as much joy out of seeing that as I did watching the horse race. My wife probably gets more joy out of watching what he's doing now than when he was racing. But for me, that's a really personal example of some of the outcomes we're getting now with the work we're doing in the post-racing area. And when it's, you know, as close to you as that, it really has an impact.
What about the costing of those things? Are these left on a trainer? Like how, you know, they sound great, but how are you funding them?
Racing Victoria has announced that we're putting in $25 million over a 3-year period, but it's not just about the money. We need to make sure we're looking at the practices of breeders, the practices of trainers as the horses are going through their racing career. So money's part of it, but there needs to be just as much effort going into the cultural side. The vast majority, if not all people in the industry, understand how important it is to look after their horses well. But it's an area we can't stop looking at.
I'd planned to check in with Racing Victoria's post-racing program towards the end of my journey, but I never expected to find them while I was still at the yearling cells.
We've actually had most of the team out here for the last 3 days providing information about our welfare and post-racing initiatives.
Why at the yearling sales? Why do you see this as important for what you're doing for post-racing careers if horses are lucky enough to have a racing career?
Every decision that's made in a horse's life from the moment that it's conceived to birth through to the sales, through to their racing career, impacts on their post-racing life. So it's really important that from the word go, we're all thinking about their second career.
What's the ideal life for them post-racing, in your eyes?
Well, it comes in many different forms, but the key thing for me is that they need to have a purpose. As long as they've got a job, they've got something to put their mind to, they'll be happy, their owner will be happy, and they'll have their welfare looked after. Every horse that's registered for racing has access to all of our post-racing and our safety net programs. And then from our perspective, understanding what our horse is doing post-racing, that's how we're going to shape our programs for the future.
And you've just mentioned that traceability. So how does that work for you guys?
We're at a point where every thoroughbred foal must be registered. And then at various points throughout their life, we've got touch points. And this is one of them. When they go into training, that's another one. And then when they retire from racing, there's also a rule requirement to tell the industry where that horse is going. So those are all the pieces of the puzzle that are already there. But what we've been dabbling in the last year or so, we've got incentives and programs that encourage people who own our racehorses post-racing mm-hmm. to tell us what horse they've got, because we've got no jurisdiction once they retire from racing. And how do we encourage those people to tell us what horse they've got?
So 3 years on from that dark day, the 7:30 as yes. you called it, how do you think things are shaping now?
I would say that even internationally we would be recognised as leaders in this space, and that's been thanks to the injection of funds. It was $25 million over 3 years, and that comes from 2% of prize money plus a contribution from Racing Victoria and our Industry Sustainability Fund. And that's enabled us to get going with all those ideas that we had, and we've had the freedom to explore all these initiatives. And in very simple terms, my team has gone from 2 people to 7 people.
There's no doubt you guys are doing some fantastic work, but as the racehorse industry keeps expanding, and there's X amount of racehorses retiring per year, is there going to be enough rehoming opportunities to marry up with that?
I genuinely believe that we're only scratching the surface of opportunities for horses post-racing. So that's our focus for the next 5-year strategic plan, is just continuing to explore what are those opportunities. And I've got a team of 7 dedicated to that cause.
So what you're saying is you could be a Melbourne Cup winner and you could have been the best racer there is, but post-racing, there's another thing for them to do. It doesn't have to be in a paddock.
Absolutely.
For these yearlings to enter racing, they first need to learn to become a racehorse. So I'm off to meet a bloke named Rob Palm. Rob's got an incredible way with horses and is a pivotal cog in their early education. He may even have an impact on their lives post-racing.
Lucrative time for them to be racing is as a 2-year-old, so they have to be in a system straight after the yearling sales. We just take every horse as an individual. As a rule, it'll take close to, you know, around 6 weeks. But if one needs to take 10 weeks, 12 weeks, we do that. We take the time.
Do you see that as vital to set them up to have opportunities post-racing, or if they don't even make it as a racehorse?
Yes, definitely. It's integral that I start them off well at the beginning of their career, so that I can get them, once they've finished their racing, and turn them into a performance horse. It's like building a house. If you have a good foundation, your house shouldn't fall down.
So you've obviously got a real love for horses, no doubt.
Oh, it's very rewarding, you know, to go from a horse that's never had a saddle on to ride them that first time. You spend that time with them, and then to see them get to the races, it's unbelievable.
We hear the term breaking in. It sounds like a quite aggressive term, breaking in. What does it actually mean?
Breaking in is a very old word. I like to think of it as an education process. As a thoroughbred, we don't have to teach them to run. That's a natural instinct for them. We just want to teach them that we are not a threat to them as a rider. We want to work with them. We'll teach them to go next to a pony as well. The young horse will get a lot of confidence from the pony, and that's a big thing, is keeping our horses confident as they progress. We don't want to intimidate them or force them into anything, because nobody learns from being bullied.
Much like my equine counterpart, I also had to find a second path after I retired. But even in my new love of camp drafting, I'm acutely aware of the realities of all sports. The path to success is never easy, and potential injury is an ever-present danger that requires various strategies to manage.
I've learned enough about horse racing to understand that these horses are like human athletes. Every second in front of the crowd represents countless hours of training and preparation.
So I'm here to see Danny O'Brien to find out how thoroughbreds are trained and what's been done for injury prevention.
I understand you're using some new data technology to track these guys. You're not only just relying on the riders. What is that, mate? How does this work? It sounds revolutionary.
In the girth, there's a heart rate monitor, and that actually goes live to my phone. So I'll get a heart rate, I'll get the speed the horse is going, and I'll also get a stride length that the horse is going. And we have, obviously, a record of everything they've done in the past. So if their heart rate is too high or their stride length is too short, we pick up on those parameters very early, and we go looking for stuff that we may not otherwise have been aware of. Pre-race, we're very cautious going into a race. It's the time the horse is going to be put at the most pressure, and we're always trying to make sure we don't run horses that might have not be 100% on the day. So every horse has a blood taken off it 48 hours out from a race.
Yep.
The bloods will 90 times out of 100 point out problems why a horse mightn't run. You know, the first one you'll find a viral or an infective picture where the horse might be a bit sick, but you know, there's other markers like bone enzyme markers that tell you that there's some bone remodelling going on, and hence the horse is maybe under a bit of pressure and shouldn't be racing at the moment. So yeah, we're really conscious in that last 72 hours before a race of just ticking every box before we'll send them to the races.
You then match this up with speaking to the jockeys after a ride.
Yeah, the first thing you do, go and see the horse and the jockey within the minute or two that they've finished a fast set, so that you get the feedback from the jockey.
You can have all the data in the world, can't we? But I guess you don't have that jockey on the back to give you that report straight away. You know, it can still trump data at some stages, I guess.
Yeah, it does. Usually it's when all those factors combine that you're really confident. You know, if the data's terrific and the rider's got a big smile on their face saying how well the horse feels and how much more he thought the horse had to give, they're all the things that you like to see going into a big race particularly.
It's great these markers are all being tracked, but for me, sometimes the issue was accurately conveying what I felt.
I want to understand, if I were a racehorse, would I really be happy with the quality of training and care that I'm receiving? Which leads me to my next question. If I were a racehorse, how would I tell anyone otherwise?
We've also got a sports scientist that gives us a report at the end of each day.
Yeah.
But this is the data that I look at and that he looks at. So you have your speed and your heart rate. And on this particular one as well, a graph that represents all the pressure that was going through each.
You get that individual limb pressure.
You do, there's a certain shape of that graph that you really want it to look like. And it also has an autonomic nerve activity. So it gives a readout on how much effort a horse is putting in. So if a good horse is having to try too hard to do a certain workout, you know that there's something compromised.
Yeah, that's a sign.
So the nerve data, the hoof pressure data, and obviously the heart rate and the speed are all really good indicators on where a horse is at, and they're really good warning signs.
It's actually blown me away because I didn't realise that you guys use this type of technology, you know, and this really shows the level of care and preparation that goes into having a horse run on the weekend.
You can just make better decisions, and it's all about making the right decisions for the horse so that they have the best career possible. You know, we're ultimately about winning races, so you're not going to do that with horses that aren't performing at their best. If they're in any way compromised, it makes no sense at all to run them. Obviously, we don't want to run them if they can't perform to their best. And not only that, if you run a horse that's not quite right, it'll often take them 6-8 weeks to get back to a level. Whereas if you just pull out and wait another week until they're right at their best, then you're not compromising the whole preparation. 95% of the time, there's no problems.
Yeah, that's because you're tracking so much data that you're pulling those horses before those problems occur.
Correct. It's pulling up that 5% of the time that there is a problem when you get ahead of the curve and it doesn't develop any further.
And that is actually the biggest thing. Like, I hate to keep talking about when I play, but it was, you know, if you could get that data early and take yourself out of one session, and, you know, you maybe miss one training session instead of doing that big injury and you know, doing a hammy and missing a month. And it sounds like it's sort of the same philosophy here with the data you guys are collecting now.
It's exactly that. Yeah, we're the same as you. There's only so many elite athletes to go around. And when you find them in your system, you just want to do everything to make sure they have the longest possible career they have.
And the byproduct of that is, you know, that the welfare of these horses has just been looked after to the nth degree.
Yeah, look, it's chicken and egg. You can't expect to get good results unless you are looking out for every part of the horse's well-being. Things are always improving, and I think in the technology around today, it's only going to get better and better going forward.
There was just one more thing I wanted to see before heading off. Champion racehorse, Vow and Declare.
So how long have you been training him for, mate?
We've had Vow since he was a yearling, so he's been with us his whole racing career. He didn't race as a two-year-old. He was a pretty gawky, backward sort of two-year-old. And then he had his first start as a three-year-old. As a four-year-old, he competed in and won the 2019 Melbourne Cup.
What have you got going on with these boots? What's going on there?
So that's just an ice boot. They're in the freezer overnight, then they come out and they get wrapped on his knees and fetlocks and cannon bones after exercise just to make sure there's no inflammation brewing there. And if you want longevity and if you want the best performance out of any athlete, then the workout's important, but the recovery's probably just as important. So, you know, we put a lot of time and effort into what happens after they've exercised each morning. He'll get massages and ultrasounds and acupunctures and everything that you're using on human athletes, we're using on racehorses.
I came in with a certain level of expectation, and it's fair to say what I've seen from Danny and his crew has blown me away. One thing I do know as an athlete, I had plenty of injuries, and you can take all the precautions you want, but unfortunately injuries still happen.
A few months after filming, Val and Declare developed a small tendon issue. True to his word, Danny pulled him from last year's spring carnival to begin rehab. Val is currently at trials, and Danny is optimistic he'll be racing again this spring. Of course, Danny is not alone at putting horses first.
When a horse gets scratched from the races, it's often very frustrating for the owner and the trainer. Sometimes it can be a grand final, could be millions of dollars on the line, but if the horse isn't right, you don't want the horse to run anyway. So we just explain to the owners and be truthful, and generally I find that absolutely fine. In the end of the day, yes, you'll be disappointed, but that's horse racing and the horse's welfare comes first.
I work with a pretty big team. We've got over 60 vets providing services at the race meetings that are scheduled all across Victoria. It's a really important decision that we make whether we're, when we're giving advice to the stewards if a horse is suitable to race or not. It's not just the horse there on the day. There's a whole team of people, weeks, months worth of work that's taken to get the horse there. And so we definitely empathise with those people when we're making those tough decisions, but we still need to make the best decision that we can, putting the horse first.
As we've already mentioned, new safety protocols were put in place a couple of years ago for all horses racing in the spring carnival.
So they are extensive, but we make no apology for putting the safety of our local horses competing here in the Melbourne Cup and the international horses that come here to compete in the spring racing carnival first. There was definitely some caution from the international trainers when they've heard about the new measures that were introduced, but last year showed us that a horse like State of Rest was able to successfully complete those pre-travel checks, the pre-race checks, and go on and win the Cox Plate and then return home safely, which is, you know, what these protocols are all about.
To push equine welfare even further, Racing Victoria, in partnership with the University of Melbourne, established the Equine Limb Injury Prevention Program, or the ELIPP.
ELIPP is internationally recognised as being a world-leading research program, and they've spent the last few years really gaining a much deeper knowledge of why injuries occur. And what's exciting about that is it gives us an opportunity to prevent them before they become more serious.
With the introduction of the Medicare for Horses scheme, Racing Victoria have once again come to the party with financial support, subsidising a number of costly scanning procedures that help prevent injuries.
Since then, we've had over 150 horses utilise the subsidy. They've come from a broad range of trainers, metropolitan trainers, country trainers, and we've had some really positive feedback. Some trainers that have said, you know, without this subsidy, this type of diagnostic imaging would be out of my reach because the costs make it quite prohibitive. Injury prevention is really important during racing, but it's equally important post-racing. If we can have horses retire that are sound and fit and healthy, it really opens up their opportunities for a second career. I had an off-the-track thoroughbred when I was younger. He was a pretty slow thoroughbred, wholly unsuccessful as a racehorse, but, you know, he was a great horse for me.
I continue to be blown away by how many resources and the level of cutting-edge technology that have gone into the equine welfare. So to find out more, I'm off to see the head of the University of Melbourne's UVET Equine Centre, Professor Chris Whitten.
How are you? Josh, nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
Mate, thanks for letting me stop by.
That's a pleasure.
What are you looking at here?
Just assessing this racehorse's fetlock to see whether we think it can continue racing or needs to go to the paddock for a while.
Well, it's a big call. Bit of pressure.
Bit of pressure, yeah, always is.
So, mate, tell me about everything that you do here.
So I'm head of the Equine Centre here. We have both our large research operation, the Equine Limb Injury Prevention Program, as well as our clinical operation, which is the Lameness and Imaging Centre, where we look at lame horses, we do advanced imaging and we assess lameness and we do some surgery on lameness cases. So we have the basics of X-ray and ultrasound, but then we also have scintigraphy, which is what people refer to as bone scanning. We have the CT system that we have here, which is a standing CT system, which is basically three-dimensional X-rays. And then we have high-field MRI, which is the only one of its kind that can do horses in Australia. So we can provide high-level imaging on the one roof.
So how is this being beneficial for racehorses out there?
The reason that we put this in with the help of Racing Victoria and the Victorian State Government was to provide imaging services to the racing industry so that trainers and owners can get early signs of injury to their horses long before they become more serious. And so the racing industry has tried to make this more available by subsidising it to encourage the people to come early rather than leaving it too late. Bone and joints, and the bone in joints are the biggest problems, and the fetlock joint, as we've got here, is where the majority of those injuries occur. It's accumulation of micro damage. So with every stride, horses are putting huge forces on their joints and their bones. And if you keep doing that, you eventually accumulate micro damage, which if that coalesces in one spot, can become a small fracture, which then can then grow into a major fracture. Treating them, for me, is not the answer. Yeah. We have to understand prevention, because by the time they come to me as a surgeon, it's too late. I can patch that horse up and we'll get some more, it'll run again and it'll might even win again, but it's never quite the same horse as it once was. And for me, that's really frustrating.
We know that last year's Melbourne Cup had zero significant injuries after imaging protocols, like the ones done by Professor Wharton and his team. These were made mandatory for all entrants.
Did you pick up anything that took horses out of the race that could have potentially been another 2020 scenario?
Yeah, so we had some horses that did have changes on their CT, which when we spoke to their trainers, they pulled the horses out themselves because, you know, they were concerned and they were really thankful that we found something. And
so, Chris, with all the data that you get to see and imaging and whatnot, what do you think is the optimal age for a racehorse to be competing?
There is good evidence that starting horses young prolongs their career and reduces their risk of injury. So, and part of that is because their skeleton is much more adaptable when they're young. So 2-year-old racing is good for horses, provided you don't overdo it. And that's the critical thing. Horses innately want to run, and they want to run in a pack. And so if other horses are running, they tend to want to run with them. That's a perfectly natural behaviour for a horse. But we need to learn what are the limits of what horses can do and keep within those limits so that we're not pushing horses beyond them. And that's the challenge for us and what our research is aimed at, is trying to understand what the horse's skeleton can cope with and to do that safely. And I think we can get there.
Sounds like it's definitely the way forward to ensuring that we can still enjoy horse racing, but do it in a safe manner.
So far on my journey, I've spoken to all the people behind the scenes of the horse racing industry. The stud owners, vets and trainers that care for these horses at each stage of their lives. Putting the horse's welfare first and all working towards getting these thoroughbreds to the track safely. But what about the people that are literally the closest to them on race day? The jockeys. I want to find out what they can do to help these horses avoid injuries. And what better person to talk to than one hell of a horsewoman and record-breaking jockey, Jamie Carr.
I don't ride the horse like it's a race, or I don't get on them and just treat them like a machine. I've had a lot of experience riding a lot of different horses, different breeds. Every horse is very different. So I think that really helps, because you don't have much time when you get on a horse till when you get to the gates, and you need to really learn very quickly the horse's attitude and their little quirks.
How do you develop that? How do you get that? Because I'm guessing that would allow you to do so many things for both trainer and owner in terms of reporting how horses feel, you know, from an injury standpoint, from how they're going to race, travel in the race.
No. It really just comes with... I've been riding since I was 2, I think. I had a lot of really good grounding with cutting and camp drafting schools, lots of horsemanship schools, and you get to feel what leg the horse picks up, if it's holding itself right, even in a race, sometimes horses won't swap legs properly. They'll be disunited with their back ends, and you have to get them balanced, because if you don't get them balanced, they're not going to stretch out. And I've had plenty of times where I've had to just wait another few strides before I go for them because they're unbalanced, because there's really no point pushing them when they're not going to be on the right legs. And you can feel when a horse isn't right. When a horse doesn't swap legs, sometimes there's an issue. Normally there is an issue because they're favouring one leg, and I think that's all very useful to relay back to the trainers, because, you know, if a horse isn't right, it shouldn't be racing. They should fix it first.
You know, we always want to win, but how hard is it to judge that versus horse's welfare when you pick something up, you know, like...
Oh, it's not hard at all, really. If your horse isn't right, I'm more than happy to sit up to pull it up, because, you know, that's going to avoid serious injury. And there's been plenty of times where I have sat up and the horse has trotted back okay, and I go, well, maybe it was my fault, maybe it is fine. But most times, 9 times out of 10, they get them back, they cool them off, and there's an issue, or there's a tendon issue, or there's a minor issue, which if I kept pushing him, it probably would have turned into a big issue.
How do you think trainers and owners feel about that? You know, you're making those judgment calls, because it is tough, you know, like, they could be prepping, young horse, owners have spent a lot of money, this race is worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, do they always trust your judgment?
9 times out of 10. And I think that just comes from experience, but most jockeys can feel that if a horse is pulling up a bit short on one side, or it's laying in or laying out, we all look after the horse first, because no one wants a horse to hurt themselves or break down, and no one wants to fall. We want to get around safely, so we all know when a horse isn't right, and we're not going to push them if they're not.
Jamie is not just involved in racing, but rehoming as well. And as I found out, all things horse related.
Very impressive. That was a surprise.
It's a bit different, isn't it?
I thought it was all racehorses for you.
No, this is what I do on my off days. I try to compete when I can, but even just coming out here and riding, and it's nice and peaceful and quiet, and it's what I love doing.
So I guess what I've just seen typifies the rehoming, because you also rode Brax Racing, didn't you?
Yeah, I rode him in his last race. I rode a bit of track work on him. He won one race.
Yeah.
I think they paid a lot of money for him, and he made about 10 grand, so he was very slow. But I loved him. I've had him for about 5 years now and do a lot of show jumping, and he's actually very versatile. He leads racehorses off of him. He's a good lead pony. He's just a ripper. I love him.
You're looking at rehoming these off-the-track horses. What's the one thing that they need in their foundation to make them successful in whatever their new careers are?
Well, it's just like you said, it's the foundation. That's the most important thing. I find horses that are educated well at the start, they make a lot easier work of it when you get them off the track. They already have the basics. I get off horses sometimes and they go, oh, what should we do, or I think that's his last race. I'm like, all right, give me a day and I've got a good person for this. Or if I love them, I normally take them myself.
I've heard from so many passionate people on this journey that are working tirelessly to keep horses safe and make sure that they have a good life post racing. And it's time to see for myself what that life might look like.
Lisa, thanks for having me here at Racing Hearts.
Very welcome.
Can you just tell me what's going on here? I see some kids in the background, some horses.
Yeah.
What's Racing Hearts all about?
So Racing Hearts is an equine-assisted therapy practice. We have a team of psychologists and counsellors that work with people in our community with mental health problems, and we incorporate their therapy into exercises with our team of off-the-track horses.
So you said off-the-track horses, so all the horses in your program are ex-race horses?
Yeah,
they are. Are they donated? How do they end up finding themselves here?
A bit of a combination. Some are donated by trainers, some we actually buy ourselves. Some are horses that I've ridden in track work when I was riding, and I've kind of followed their career and made sure that they ended up here with us as a therapy horse. We've had some horses from the Racing Victoria Reset program that have come here. But quite often what happens is some of the horses, when they come here, because they're just finished racing and they're high performance athletes, they're very fit, they're on high energy feed, and they're quite energetic. So we give them quite a long spell when they get here, get all that high energy feed out of their systems, lots of patting and desensitization work as well. And then we introduce them to the clients and introduce them to lots of big groups of kids, which can be a little daunting for the horses sometimes, but they all handle it pretty well.
Did you come up with the idea? Was this Racing Victoria? How did it come about? I want to know the history.
So I actually worked for Racing Victoria for 7 years. I was part of the apprentice jockey program and teaching track riders and in the workforce. I did my psychology degree while I was at Racing Victoria, and I had studied counselling in Ireland as well. And equine assisted therapy was quite a new emerging form of therapy around that time, probably around maybe 10 years ago. It just made sense for me to have retired racehorses involved in equine assisted therapy because it provides them another pathway for an option after racing.
To get other states to follow on, how do you truly show them how effective this program is?
So for the last 12 months, we've actually been collecting a lot of data from our schools groups. So when they arrive, we have a feelings board, and it actually correlates to what is available in their mental health program in the school curriculum. So what we've done is we've taken before measures and we've taken after measures of how beneficial or how effective the programs are, or the sessions are. And we're currently collating all that data. And we've already spoken to a couple of universities about producing a published study so that we have some really good published evidence to show the efficacy of what we do here.
What makes up the horses in your paddock? Because, you know, when I think of it, I think off the track, okay, these are just horses that failed. We're no good as racehorses, and now this is their life.
We have a really huge spectrum of the kinds of horses that come here. So we do have some horses that just did not want to be racehorses and they've ended up here. But we've also had some Group 1 winners. So we've had Lankan Rupee for a short while here, which was amazing. You know, his owner was so kind in allowing us to have him as part of our therapy herd. We have Lord Belvedere that just arrived last week. He's a multiple city winner as well.
It's a good name too.
It is, a great name.
Does he just prance around? Is that the man?
He does now, yeah, because he's had a little break, so he's full of beans, full of energy out in the paddock. And we also have another horse called Lagerfeld that won a few city races as well for Kieran Maher. And again, those horses, regardless of whether they've won group races or they've not even made it to the track, they all have something to offer in therapy.
Did you ever have anything to do with horses before coming here?
Not really.
No? What have you learned?
Bond with them and control my emotions. It makes me feel better because every Thursday I remember that I get to come here and I get happier.
You get to come every Thursday. I might have to start coming to school with you. Do you have a favourite horse?
Chatsfield.
This is Chatsfield? Why Chatsfield?
Well, I came here last year and we kind of just bonded. I don't know why he's my favourite horse, he just is.
I'm not easily rattled, and perhaps it's because I've just had a child of my own. But this simple interview really summed up just how important and impactful these horses are to these children. A moment that wasn't lost on either of us.
Gets my emotions in check for at home.
It's
you were telling me out there with your psychological background, with your degree, she's just implemented as grade six, giving the gold answer.
I just got really teary when she was talking. Like, I'm usually really good at like holding it together because they're such good kids. And they just need a bit of direction sometimes, you know? It's not always anybody's fault.
Yeah.
It just sometimes get a bit lost. But when you hear, you know, when you just hear directly from them, like for a kid of her age to have such awareness that it actually helps regulate her emotions, that's huge.
I was expecting her to just go, I feel funnier when I'm around horses. I was looking for a simple answer. That's pretty special.
Meaningful and measurable interactions with people just like this one really are a great way to expand post-racing pathways for thoroughbreds. And as it turns out, Racing Hearts are not alone in providing equine-assisted therapy.
The organisation is Riding for Disabled, and it works with people of all ages and all disabilities, so if there's social, emotional or physical disabilities, and it introduces them to the world of horses. It helps them build their confidence, their skills, their communication, their social connections, connection with the horse, as well as their fellow riders, the coach and the volunteers that work with them. We've got a relationship with Racing Victoria and with their off-the-track program, particularly with finding another home for an off-the-track horse. RVL help us identify those and then pay for the retraining of those horses.
Good boy.
That's the versatility of a thoroughbred. You can put them in a professional environment with a venting dressage, whatever. You can also put them, take them out trial riding, and you can have them in this environment, which, you know, working with vulnerable people, it's really important that you have that beautiful nature of that horse to work with those people.
When I'm up here, I feel happy. The horses make me feel excited.
Hayley has been riding for over 10 years here with RDA. This has been amazing for her in her self-esteem and her confidence and communication skills. She loves it, gets a lot out of it. A lot of clients that come here perhaps don't have a lot of success in other things in their life, but they can ride a horse. You know, they might not ride a bike, but they can ride a horse.
This is a fantastic pathway for an off-the-track racehorse. Not only helps them, but it also helps those people that work with them. Yes, it helps the riders in terms of building their confidence, their social skills, and a range of different other therapeutic benefits. But what it also does is it helps volunteers, and it helps them, and it helps them working with the riders and the horses collectively. And I think that's a really important thing. So they're central to all of this, and it's really important to get it right before both parties, because they're such a beautiful animal and they deserve to be in a beautiful home and well-loved and looked after, and they certainly get that at the centres.
Hayley's just started riding Archie, and he is an ex-racehorse. As you can see, it's a match made in heaven. She looks great on him, and he responds to her really, really well. And they love it. He loves it. He's like, comes up and he's happy. He sees us arrive and he's like, okay, this is good. I'm here.
Good boy. There's probably nothing else I'd rather do in the world.
Throughout this journey, I've been amazed by the level of care and dedication of everyone throughout this industry. An industry that's now a world leader in equine welfare. And what's even more impressive is that everyone I've spoken to has the drive and passion to keep getting better.
When I began this journey, I really wasn't sure where it was going to take me. But 8 months on, I'm just so surprised and so happy with the people I've been able to meet, the horses I've been allowed to see along the road. For instance, take this little filly here, Cha-Cha. You might remember that she was right at the start of this story, and I was lucky enough to see her fall down just a couple of paddocks away. To be back here now and seeing her 8 months on, looking as healthy as she is, and enjoying her early stages in life is so pleasing.
And after all this, I can safely say horses like Cha-Cha have a bright future, because this industry really is here for the horses.